Hello, I'm Brian.
And I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
This is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. We've had a 2-week break, mainly due to the appalling heat we've had to endure in the UK. So the podcast has been on a wee summer holiday. Headlines and what we're going to be chatting about in this week's episode. So on the podcast that we recorded on the 17th of July, Caroline spoke about one controversial Chinese company, Huawei. And this week, Caroline?
We are talking about another controversial Chinese company, allegedly controversial, shall we say, TikTok, social networking, I don't know, phenomenon, really. It's come out of nowhere. And there's some questions being asked about its practices. So yeah, we're going to dig into that a little bit.
Cool. More on that soon. Claire, so this week we've had the A-level results without exams this week. So you're going to talk about...
Yeah, so a little bit on the A-levels, on the results for computing students and the gender split as well on that, on this year's cohort.
Thanks. And I'm going to continue on Claire's topic in a sense, but I'm going to circle back to the Scottish Hires fiasco of last week, the week before. So we're going to be talking algorithms towards the end of the podcast. Today we're starting with Caroline and TikTok. What is it?
What is TikTok? You don't know what TikTok is? Oh my gosh. It's a short form video social networking site. So people take videos of themselves, usually around 15 seconds long, although they can be a little bit longer. And it's basically, a lot of people use it to do shared dances, their take on, there's like these things called TikTok dances where a piece of music just goes viral on there with everyone kind of aping each other's dance moves on it and stuff like that. But there's lots of like lip syncing content on there with like a voice clip will just be repeated loads and loads of times with people doing their own take, like acting out the voice clip and just trying to make people laugh. And there is original content on there, people who post their own stuff, but then that tends to get copied as well. So a lot of the previous controversy around TikTok has been on sort of people getting proper attribution for, like, if they create a voice clip on there and it goes viral and everyone copies it, things like that. But yeah, that's almost seems like a non-issue. Well, not a non-issue, but it's a far minor issue now, some of the stuff they're facing at the minute. I'm an avid TikTok user, actually. I don't upload any videos. I just watch them. I am a consumer of TikTok content rather than a creator, I have to say. But yeah, I'm deeply troubled by all this talk at the moment that's being bandied around about TikTok potentially getting banned. But not actually on the point that I do use it, but not as troubled as I am about the fact Alex Croxton, our security editor, every time he writes about it, he keeps referring to it as a sort of short video social networking site that's beloved by Generation Z. It's like, no, I'm a card-carrying millennial and I love that site. So ageism at work, please. No, thank you.
I mean, it does skew younger though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But then if you go on there's lots of hashtags for content on there for people like over 40s club, over 50s club, over 30s club, stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's become my sort of go-to place during lockdown to sort of distract myself from the series of unfortunate events that 2020 has rolled out for all of us. So,
I mean, if you were the target audience for it, though, you wouldn't need your own age hashtag.
I'm just going to ignore that because it makes me feel down about myself. if you're having a down day or a difficult period, you know, you scroll through these sort of 15-second video clips of people doing comedy routines or prancing about, and it does take your mind off things. I used to be a bit of a doom scroller through Twitter. So in the evenings, you'd sit there and be like, okay, let's look through what's happening today. Let's go through Twitter. And you'd be looking for like funny stuff. But obviously as world events conspire and it's all doom and gloom and bad news, going through Twitter just becomes a very depressing kind of activity to spend your evenings doing. So if you can watch these video clips instead and people, you know, distract yourself, not watch the news, watch this instead. Like I say, I think it has worked wonders almost with just keeping your mood a little bit higher during, you know, the 2020 corona shit show, basically. Yeah, I'm clearly not alone in doing that. You know, the app itself has reportedly been downloaded like 2 billion times across the globe.
2 billion times.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not actually sure on the user numbers because there are different numbers being passed around. But yeah, the downloads alone sort of show you how how much appetite there is for the content on show there. But
it's,
yeah,
it's more accessible, say, than putting video on YouTube. It's more democratic, if you like, more anyone can have a go.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, as long as you've got the app and you've got a camera, like a camera on your phone, you can, yeah, pretty much just run with it.
I think the fact that they're short form as well means that they're, you know, like people's attention span. Like scrolling through YouTube, you can't guarantee that the videos are going to be, you know, like consumable to the point where you can be bothered to sit there and watch them for more than 30 seconds. Whereas, yeah, the short form of TikTok sort of makes it, you know, a lot more fun and you consume more content in a shorter amount of time.
Also, yeah, and also if you come across something, you just think, well, I don't care for that clip. You've only wasted 15 seconds of your time. You scroll up, another clip comes on, another clip, you know, it's the... It's like, okay, well, you know, I'll just move on to the next. It's quite easy kind of throwaway content, I guess. As we've been reporting on at Computer Weekly, the site is under threat in the US on the back of the government's sort of increasing wariness, I guess we could say, of sort of Chinese tech firms and the threat it claims they pose to citizens' privacy, national security, and the economy as well. So it's claimed by the US government that TikTok automatically captures sort of vast amounts of information from its users, including sort of their sort of internet and other network activity, location data, and sort of what they're browsing and their search histories and stuff like that. Their worry is that will pave the way for the Chinese Communist Party to sort of access information on US citizens, but also, you know, federal employees, contractors, resulting in sort of sexy sounding things like blackmail and corporate espionage, stuff like that. So that's why they're sort of like looking quite closely at the way TikTok operates at the moment. It's worth stating for the record, actually, that the Chinese government has repeatedly rubbished all of those sort of claims and ideas and everything. But even so, President Trump has signed a couple of his executive orders earlier this month that means the plug could be pulled on TikTok's US operations by the 20th of September 2020 unless another tech firm steps in and acquires its parent company, ByteDance. It's US operations, and there's a couple of names in the frame at the moment who may or may not end up acquiring its US arm, and they include Microsoft and Twitter. So all's not lost yet. If one of them can swoop in by that deadline, you know, TikTok will remain online in the US. The details of Microsoft's acquisition proposition for TikTok, I think, sort of neatly highlights what the US government's issues with it are, in that they've stated that subject to a security review, if they acquire it, you know, they will seek to ensure that any private data belonging to US TikTok users will remain hosted in the US. It won't be passed to China or anything like that. You know, the data will be protected, and any of those concerns that we've mentioned previously about, you know, the US government concerned that, you know, if it's tracking US citizens, that could leave us open to blackmail and things like that, you know, that will be, those worries will be gone. But yeah, if those deals don't come off, you know, it looks like the site will go dark from that date in the US, which is something its users are already sort of showing signs of sort of mobilizing against, but also its competitors are as well, which is worth noting. For instance, Instagram, who are never one to miss a trick when it comes to sort of aping the functionality of its competitors, have debuted a new TikTok like feature this week called Reels, which is more or less exactly the same. You can add, you can lip sync stuff, you can do dances, you can, you know, 15 second share videos, stuff like that. So it's all very similar. And it won't have gone unnoticed, because it hasn't by me. I'm an avid TikTok user, as I've already said. But a lot of the big US sort of content creators on the platform are already starting to sort of include links to other social platforms, so that if it were to shut down, you know, they're, you know, they won't lose their following. You know, they can try and find them on, say, Instagram perhaps, or sort of other sites as well, or Twitter. So yeah, so they, I think it is a genuine concern.
I mean, going on Instagram is basically very incestuous anyway. You sort of get screen captured content from every other social networking site just so that you can view it on Instagram. It's like you go to all of these different sites and it's basically just, you know, like users copying content across all of the different platforms to view in different places.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows, if TikTok does shut down, just Instagram will just become the go-to place for visual social networking content on the web, perhaps. I don't know. Like I said, the whole thing with like Snapchat had a huge sort of rise to prominence, and then on the fact that people could share stories and stuff like that, and then suddenly that functionality appears in Instagram, and Snapchat. People still use it, but yeah, its sort of usage has dropped markedly since Instagram did that. So you could see why this is, you know, they're probably watching that very closely, thinking, oh, how do we swoop in if, you know, the worst were to happen? It's, as it happens, though, the US is not the only country sort of looking to pick holes in TikTok sort of data protection practices and protocols. There's like various governments at the moment that are doing similar things and have got their sort of data protection watchdogs paying close attention to its ways of handling people's data and stuff like that. So we've reported on like France, the Netherlands, and also the UK's sort of data protection chiefs, the fact that they're all circling TikTok at the moment, which probably goes some way to explaining why its parent company is investing in building its first European data centre in Ireland at the moment. They've already got something of a presence in Ireland. They set up an EMEA trust and safety hub in Dublin earlier this year, and they've sort of made some statements about how much they're investing in sort of data protection staff, security personnel, privacy experts and stuff like that. And its Irish operations are now acting as its sort of data controller, so that it will, you know, sort of take the lead on sort of data protection issues for its operations across like most of Europe and stuff like that. So it sort of seems, if you add all that together, that the story is, you know, if TikTok wants to continue to operate as a global brand, it's only going to be able to do that if it can get arrangements in place to ensure any data generated on its users is hosted and managed locally, and just, you know, to appease or just, you know, respond to any of these concerns people have that user data from other countries might end up in Chinese hands, allegedly, for bad deeds, allegedly.
And it's not really like Huawei is an important part of the critical national infrastructure, telecoms equipment and stuff like that. And it's interesting that this is the, you know, the first kind of Chinese or China-born company that's kind of gone global in this way. There is WeChat, isn't there, which is a bit like,
yeah,
that's not really, you know, because that doesn't penetrate the West, but it's used very much in China.
If I understand it correctly as well, WeChat has lots of mini programs within it where you can do more than just chat about stuff as well. So it's important over there because everybody uses it and you can use it to do several different things. And there isn't really
payments and stuff as well, isn't it?
But you can't, there's nothing, you know, like outside, you know, like over in the West that you would think, you know, like you can live in that app and not go anywhere else for anything else, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I wonder if part of it is, though, is because it is such a visual medium, you know, necessary. Would language barriers and stuff like that be potentially something that would hold up its adoption across the world? Maybe not.
Probably safe.
I hope so. Like I say, I'm a big fan. And then if I find out that, like, you know, I'm being snooped upon, I'm not going to be happy about that. Because obviously, it's like anything. The more data you feed into it, the more it refines the content that is the content that gets sent back to you. So, like, for example, if there's like a, what's my favourite kind of content on there? Let's say, unsurprisingly, dogs, good dogs doing things and people making fun of dogs. So you see a video, you really like it, and then you press this heart saying, oh, I like this, and you save it to your likes, and therefore you're going to get more and more dog content being surfaced to you and stuff like that, which is fine. But there's things like there's a few,
which is fine,
which is absolutely fine, 100%. Please, if you're snooping on me, TikTok, more dogs, good dogs, thank you. But no, there's things like with me and my sister, and I know a lot of people have this sort of observation with social network. We'll be just discussing something, and then the next day we'd suddenly get a stream of videos of related stuff appearing on TikTok, and you're like, but you are a bit like, oh my god, like, has it been snooping, or have I actually, as I've been going through it, because like I say, the turnover of content you see is so quick. Have I liked stuff and not realized, and then it's feeding into that, into its algorithms, and that's shaping the stuff I'm being shown to me. So yeah, it is interesting. I hope I'm not being snooped on, but
interesting times for TikTok, and it's, forgive me, Generation Z devotee.
Yeah, whatever.
It's not popular. Well, this has been a very big week indeed for young adults more generally. Claire, what's happened with the A-level results vis-a-vis computing this week?
Yes. So I looked into the A-level results on the day that they were published. It always makes me nervous looking into numbers because I'm always worried that, you know, like I'll have misinterpreted them or got them wrong. But I looked at the results for the computing A-levels cumulatively across the UK. So those are the figures that I was looking at. And I know that everybody wants to talk about grades because that seems to be, you know, like the big controversial issue at the minute. Regarding the results, the examless exam results. But what I wanted to talk about first, if it's okay, is just like the gender split in A-level computing. Because it's something that shifts ever so slightly towards the positive each year, but it's just taking such like a ridiculously painful amount of time for it to get anywhere near to, you know, like 50-50. So there were more people taking computing A-levels this year in comparison to last year, which is good. There were more boys and more girls taking computing A-levels this year, which is also good. But if you look at the gender split, this year there were 10,629 male candidates for A-level computing. And there were 1,797 female candidates. It starkly lays out the difference, you know, like in popularity. And it just doesn't seem to be getting much better. And it's just obviously really disappointing, especially when there's already a diversity problem within the tech industry as a whole. And then if you go all the way through the pipeline, it seems to be that at every stage we're having the same problems with encouraging, you know, like women to see it as sort of like a viable path and a viable career for them. So that always depresses me every year. So that's one of the things that I look into every year, and I'm constantly disappointed. But that was an increase of girls taking computing A-level, which, like I said, it sort of increases a little bit every year. So last year there were 1,475, this year 1,797. So it is sort of like a very small increase, but not enough, not enough.
But proportionally, they're getting some better results, aren't they? The A-stars seems to be more of the women who took it were getting more A-stars compared with male counterparts.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, this is the second year in a row that the female candidates got higher grades than the male candidates. Yeah. But the results are a bit different this year. I know a lot of people have been, you know, like throughout the UK have been complaining of sort of just results that in no way represent the grades that they were predicted or they feel like they should have gotten and stuff like that. In computing, it seems like the grades are a lot higher than they would have been the year before, but significantly so. And this is why I worried that like maybe I'd misinterpreted the data. I just, you know, I'm reading it over and over again to make sure that I have got it right. But basically, it seems like this year, 8% of the students who took computing A-level got an A-star, compared with 3.4% last year. So that seems like a significant jump to me. And if you compare boys versus girls, this year 11% of the girls got an A-star versus 7.5% of the male candidates, which is a big gap, especially considering that last year it was 3.7% of girls and 3.4% of boys got an A-star in computing A-level. So yeah, girls did better than boys, significantly so this year, because the grades, the higher awarded grades seem to be very, you know, like high in comparison to last year as well. And it seems that that's because of the way that the exam results were figured out. And I think the algorithm that was used has been published since I looked into the results. So I need to, you know, like go and have a deep dive into that. But basically, teachers were asked to submit, I think, a predicted grade for students and then a ranking for students that sort of puts them in order. Then the centres were asked to give centre assessment grade. So all of those plus some mock exam results and coursework grades were all taken into account. But then Ofqual had to use statistical standardization models to make sure that that didn't skew the grades in a positive manner, because there was some speculation that if a people who have been working with students over the 2 years of their A-levels are more likely to predict them higher than they might have got. They took into account, past data to see, how those institutions normally perform at this time of year, and it's so complicated and so much gone into it.
Because I've been doing the same thing with some of the Scottish results, and my brain was just fried, reading through how they arrived at their algorithm that they imposed upon the teacher assessments and stuff. It is quite complex.
So it's no surprise, really. Sorry that people are questioning it.
No, and I think because as well, obviously you've got all these systems and everything, and it's like a lot of the discussions we have on the podcast about algorithms and stuff, models and stuff like that. But the human behaviour side of things isn't factored into this at all. And I think we probably all know people from our own school days or university days who would do absolutely naffle like in the run up to an exam. They'd be completely just think, "Oh, mocks, whatever." But then could pull it out of the bag come exam time, pull an all-nighter, just retain the information, just like absolutely, blitz the exam, do really, really well. So it's kind of, obviously this system has worked against people like that. But also a lot of these kids, as a child once myself, mocks, you're a bit like, who cares? Like, it doesn't make that much difference. Like, they probably might not have put as much effort into their mocks because they had no way of knowing at the time they probably sat them. The importance that will be weighted on them later down the line. So it's obviously there's lots of decisions made around this time politically, whatever, that you just think in hindsight should be better decisions, but they can only work with the information they had at the time. But this does seem like one that will be scrutinized and questioned and probably criticized quite rightly, just because it's all gone so wrong.
And there was some debate as well over smaller schools. Because if you have a group under a certain size, then it's really difficult to use these methods to come out with a fair result in the same way that you could with a larger group of people, which means that smaller schools seemed to get better results, and smaller schools tend to be private schools or ones that people pay for. So you're sort of weighting more towards, people with a better socioeconomic background, which...
Yeah, sorry, Claire. I think the English the model that the English used is kind of vulnerable to that criticism, that they were giving more weight to, as I understand it, more weight to kind of teacher assessments in more niche subjects like music or German or French, or which actually these days are quite niche subjects, with smaller class sizes, which tend to be in the private schools. So that kind of model of having a kind of combination of the algorithm plus kind of variable weighting to what the teacher assessments were, actually in the end was privileging the privately educated. So that's been a controversial aspect of that one.
It's been a really, you hear some stories if you look at social media, especially reading through Twitter, and it's just completely... excuse the language, fucked people over. Some people are being forced to go through clearing when they were expecting everything to be great, and it will carry on affecting these people for years and years to come, like you say.
It does sound anecdotally like so many more people are going to have to go through clearing and...
Yeah, they're obviously universities and colleges and stuff are being encouraged to sort of be less... not less scrutinous, but just to be aware of the situation when they're accepting people and stuff. But I would imagine, obviously we don't have that data yet. I would imagine a lot more people have gone through clearing this year than in previous years.
Don't have that data. I've got some anecdotal stuff that suggests that, they're giving people the benefit of the doubt more than they would have done in previous years and things like that. So, and there is going to be a lot of appealing going on. Which I think they're going to try and facilitate that, so it's not too too much of a barrier to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I think I read somewhere that people might be given a chance to actually sit an exam in the autumn if they want to try and do, you know, like the traditional way of grading.
Yeah.
But it's so stressful. I wouldn't trust myself to come out with a better exam result after all of that. Mm. You'd be so...
There is about exams, don't we, for years afterwards. You kind of wake up in the middle of the night thinking, I've got my Latin exam tomorrow morning. I haven't done it. I've forgotten all my Latin. How am I going to get through it? Although, the gender thing, yeah, I know you're disappointed there, Claire, but there does seem to be incremental improvement in terms of computing, education.
Yeah, there does. There is an improvement each year. And I think for the three sciences as well, physics, chemistry, and biology, I think women make up half of the A-level candidates for those subjects now. So at least some of STEM is getting better. So I guess, you know, we just have to keep pushing and trying to make progress in those areas in the best way that we can.
Still on the theme of exams, I'm going to just take us back in time to the 2nd of August. That's when the results were given in Scotland for hires, advanced hires, and level fives, which are the kind of Scottish equivalent of GCSEs. But the main qualification in Scotland that's important for university entrance is the higher. I know nothing about A-levels, but I do have some hires. So when the results were announced, it was a similar sort of thing. They had that kind of the teacher assessments and the centre assessments, and the Scottish Qualifications Authority, the SQA, developed an algorithm. And I've read through, like Claire, I've read through the kind of documentation and explaining the methodology and how they went through various different types of statistical model before alighting on the statistical model that they thought would be most kind of fair and best and so on. But the upshot of it was that 124,000 of the teacher recommendations were rejected by the imposition of the model based on the data from previous years and so on. And a quarter of higher students were downgraded. And the kind of really iniquitous thing, certainly on the face of it, is that the most deprived one-fifth of the student population in terms of household income and stuff, their pass rate went down by 15%, and the wealthiest one-fifth went up by 7%. So on the face of it, and there was tremendous anger over these outcomes. Nevertheless, higher passes went up by 4.1 points. Had they not been moderated, they would have gone up by 14 points. So there's a kind of 10% difference there. But, you know, tremendous kind of outrage throughout Scotland because of all of this. And they decided to just revert to the teacher assessments. And Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister, on the 10th of August, stood up in Parliament in Edinburgh and said, "We got this wrong." She said, "We tried to approach this as a kind of system problem and come up with the best solution for the system, but losing sight of the impact on individual pupils. So we're going to go back to what the teachers said the kids were going to get, the students were going to get, rather." And then John Swinney, who's the Education Secretary in Scotland, he just survived a vote of no confidence on the 12th of August. I think quite a kind of competent politician, John Swinney, as indeed are a lot of the SNP leaders. But the thing is, what they were trying to do, like, so technically what they were trying to do, and it's the same in England, was to try and suppress grade inflation so that the results are future-proofed, so that in the future people won't look at your A-levels or hires and say, you're from the 2020 cohort, where your teachers just gave you what they wanted to give you, and so on. So there's that, you know, kind of future proofing element that they were trying to do, kind of maintain credibility. And you can sort of see why that made sense. But I don't know, it just seems to me politically and morally a bit of a mistake. You know, given the times that we live in, given the difficulties of the COVID period, the Scottish government, maybe the English government too, English and Welsh, should have just said, let's take a step back, let's take it easy, let's chill. You know, we're just going to have to accept that there might be an element of grade inflation.
Mm.
It's no big deal. Because what they've done is, by trying to come up with the best technical solution that they could, in terms of the algorithm and so on, has created a rod for their own back. So they're now, and this continues to be the case in England, I mean, the Labour Party is very strong in saying, this is very unjust, what you've done here, and this is a botched algorithm, and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not really in a position to look at the Scottish algorithm and say, it's botched, you know. I mean, it seems pretty technically rigorous to me, but it's not really the algorithm. It's more applying this method in the first place that seems to me to be the kind of political mistake.
I don't know. I don't know if either of you two can answer this, but was this the system that has been put in place? And I know there are different systems in both countries and everything, but was this kind of like an emergency sort of thing that they pulled up? Just, oh, let's just do it this way. Or is it like something they've like, in case of emergencies, this is what we'll have to roll in as a system to grade people?
I think they've just been working on it from the beginning of the pandemic.
And okay.
They've been hard on it. I mean, the documentation for both the algorithms goes into hundreds of pages. That's kind of background, the context, all the different possibilities they considered, and they decided on this one. Both slightly different. I'd be hard pushed to tell you exactly how they're different, but my sense is they're a bit different. The English one is more combinative, so it's more, you know, teacher input in certain contexts, which again is where this kind of whole thing of, oh, I've got a small class of Latin pupils in a private school somewhere. I know them really well. So that's been given more weight than, say, if I'm an English teacher in a sixth form college or an FE college, where I've got loads and loads of students doing English, and then it's been more weighted towards the algorithm, I think, is the way that goes. Whereas the Scottish one just kind of squished the statistical model on top of everything, and then ended up with results that people were unhappy with.
I'm going to give you a B grade for that answer, I think, Brian. as
far as I can tell, they weren't planning to have a year where nobody could sit exams and they would have to make up grades. I think they did, you know, like sit down once they realized that they might have to figure out grades without final year exams. And they did do testing of different statistical models to try and, you know, like flatten out all of the grades and tweak them and make sure that this year didn't look any better or worse than last year.
I was just interested because I'm not very close to this subject really, so I didn't know. And it does sound a bit like this is something, you know, in terms of pandemic planning, is this something like schools are always preparing for just in case, or is it something that has been like a lot of the stuff we're having to all do at the moment, it's been done on the fly as a right, we're just learning as we go kind of thing? But no, that all makes sense.
No, it's a very good question, and it's a question to which I do not have an answer.
Okay, that's an F grade now, thanks. No marks.
I think it's fair to say they've been working really hard
to
try and get the best kind of statistical model that they could. But maybe in retrospect, they shouldn't have bothered because the Scottish government, as I said, has just gone back to saying, well, the teachers know the kids best, and who cares if there's a bit of, the government wouldn't say this, who cares if there's a bit of grade inflation, but I think from the point of view of natural justice, we should maybe just have accepted that. Mm. But this story is going to run, it's not finished in England.
Uh, al- also, and this isn't very helpful for people going through it, but eventually you get to a point in your life where your A-level results don't matter as much anymore. But obviously for them, that's not now.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you very much, Claire. I don't know how many people put their A-levels or Scottish Highers on their LinkedIn profile. Probably not many. Some will, but probably not many. And once you're into university, you're in. Mm. It's just a way of getting into where you want to be.
Yeah, or whatever you choose
to
do.
If you want to be a university student, and there's lots of people who don't.
Apprenticeships.
Yeah, exactly.
Work, even.
Or indeed having a job, yeah.
Yeah, but once you've been working for a while, though, that's the skill set that you develop and need. That's what you get, you know, like graded on in inverted commas.
Yeah.
How good you are at your job. Then that helps you get the next job.
Yeah. I think that's right. And there is maybe a case for having said, well, I'll let the future decide.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get an A star for A-level maths and actually it turns out you're not very good at maths, you will get found out in the job that you're doing. The future will take care of itself. Mm. It does create a problem for universities, though, potentially, if you don't kind of go down the results moderation route, because you've just got too many students then. I mean, how do you select? But my feeling is that's their problem.
What, as in too many students, not enough places?
Yeah, too many students, not enough places for those students.
Or maybe they have to come up with their...
How do you select if you're not 100% convinced of the credibility of the results?
Freshers Week Hunger Games?
Yeah, maybe. What about The Apprentice? Get them to do tasks and thin them out throughout the course of the academic year.
This will run. The GCSE results are out quite soon, aren't they?
Yeah. Next week. Well, this week, by the time the podcast comes out. Could be 10 years ago by the time you listen to the podcast. Who knows? It depends when you're listening to our lovely voices.
Well, look, as usual, we'll provide links to all the stories that we've discussed in the summary article for the podcast and to other relevant material. For example, all the documentation around the methodologies. We'll probably have a lot of listeners who'll understand this stuff much better than I do. And you can read that summary on computerweekly.com, but you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Sadly, that's all we've got time for this week. So it just remains for me to say, as ever, thank you very much indeed to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you very much, listener, for listening. And stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.